Today's episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by Bambi. HR manager salaries average $70,000 a year. Only Bambi gives you a dedicated HR manager for just $99 a month. Get your free HR compliance audit at bambi.com/accidentalcreative. Spelled bambe.com/accidentalcreative. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I'm your host. I'm also the author of a bunch of books, including the brand new book, The Motivation Code, which, by the way, I'm going to be speaking at this week at an event called LeaderCast. If you are in any way interested, you can find a host site or join us virtually. Join 100-something thousand of your fellow leaders at LeaderCast. Just go to leadercast.com to learn more about that. Again, going to be speaking about the motivation code. Very excited. So how do the best of the best do what they do? How do the best achieve greatness consistently over and over and over again? Well, if you want to know how the best do what they do, you have to decode greatness. Decoding Greatness is the title of the new book by Ron Friedman, and he's our guest today. He's going to talk to us about how the best in the world reverse engineer success. How can we look at where we want to be and decode what it takes to get there, and then plot our strategy for accomplishing our objectives? So we're going to talk to Ron Friedman about that in just a minute. Hey, on an upcoming episode, I'm going to be answering all of your questions related to the creative process. Anything you want to ask me, anything you've ever wanted to ask me as you've been listening to the show, just go to accidentalcreative.com/questions. You can click on a link right there to record your question, which might be played back here on the show, or just send them to interact@accidentalcreative.com and I'll read them here in my best imitative voice on the show and hopefully address your question. So again, love to hear your questions for an upcoming episode. All right, before we dive into the conversation with Ron Friedman, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Bambi. So when running a business, HR issues can kill you. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, and labor regulations, and HR manager salaries aren't cheap, an average of $70,000 a year. Bambi, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small business. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance all for just $99 a month. With Bambi, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. From onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day-to-day, all for just $99 a month. Month to month, no hidden fees, cancel anytime. Listen, you didn't start your business because you wanted to spend time on HR compliance. Let Bambi help. Get your free HR audit today. Go to bambi.com/accidentalcreative right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's bambi.com/accidentalcreative, spelled B-A-M to the B-E-E.com/accidentalcreative to get your free HR audit. And we thank Bambi for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, I'm thrilled to have back on the show today, Ron Friedman. Ron is the author of a new book. It's called Decoding Greatness. I can't wait to dive into this conversation. Ron, welcome back to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Todd. It is great to be back.
So this word greatness, right? Like when we hear the word greatness, I think it conjures up a lot of images in a lot of people's minds. You know, I've always said, I think how you define greatness defines you in so many ways, you know, because it kind of defines what you value. So I wanted to start just by asking you, Ron Friedman, how do you define greatness as you approached it in this book?
Yeah, so I define greatness as the top performers in your field. What are they doing? And figuring out what it is that makes them unique, and then identifying ways that you can apply their approach to your work. And so it really isn't about an objective standard. It really is about a personal observation about the things that move you.
Hmm. So Ron, in your research for this book, you discovered something you weren't quite expecting. What was it?
I discovered that the stories we've been told about success are wrong. most of us grew up with two basic stories about how people vault to the top of their profession and achieve at the highest levels. The first story is that greatness comes from talent. And from this perspective, we're all born with certain innate strengths, and that the key to achieving your greatness is finding a field that allows your strengths to shine. The second story is the Malcolm Gladwell story, which is that greatness comes from practice. It's the idea that getting to the top requires the right practice regimen and an appetite for doing lots of hard work. But in doing the research for Decoding Greatness, what I found is that there's a third story, and it's one that's not often told, yet it's the path that an astonishing number of top performers, from writers to artists to inventors, all use, and it involves mastering a skill that few people have heard about, and that's reverse engineering.
So how do you define reverse engineering? What does that mean as it relates to studying greatness?
So reverse engineering simply means studying the best in a field and then working backward to figure out how they did it. In Silicon Valley, it's well known. There's a long history of coders deconstructing winning products to learn how they're made. It's how we got the personal computer and laptops and the iPhone. But what's less well known is that reverse engineering also explains how writers like Stephen King and Malcolm Gladwell learned their craft, and how painters like Claude Monet became a groundbreaking artist, and how Judd Apatow became one of the most successful comedy minds of our generation. And it's about studying the best in the field and then figuring out how their works were created and how their techniques can be applied to developing new works.
How did you decide which performers to study in writing this book?
A lot of it had to do with the people that I find interesting. And one of the recommendations that I make for folks as they learn the practice of reverse engineering, which is a skill that I talk about in the book, is the first step really is collecting examples, becoming a collector. And so when we think about the word collect, we think about physical objects. We think about things like collecting wine or stamps, but it really is, that term really can be applied far more broadly. So for example, designers will collect logos, copywriters will collect headlines, authors will often collect words. And by collecting examples, what you find is what makes those examples unique. And so for me, I started by collecting studies that I find interesting. I also collected stories that I found impactful, and I looked for overlap. So it wasn't so much an approach that involved identifying particular people who have been defined as the greats, but more of what are the stories that we can learn from, and how do they connect to some of these studies about ways that people can elevate their skill building.
The way you describe that collection process, I love this phrase. You said that we need a private museum. What are the qualities of a private museum, and how should we go about thinking about that for ourselves? Because listen, people who are listening right now are in all different kinds of professions, all different types of roles in their organizations, have all different kinds of ambitions. How should we be thinking about how we curate that private museum?
Well, anytime you encounter something that is impactful for you, whether it be a memo, it might be an email, might be a website, anything that you think, wow, that's really interesting, I wonder what's going on here. It can be as simple as bookmarking it or starting a Google Doc where you drop it in. And that becomes your private museum of the exceptional. And one of the practices that I encourage everyone to start using is using Spot the Difference, which is the game that we all played as kids, where you compare two visuals, one against the other, and look to see what's different about this visual versus the other. Here, it's about comparing the ordinary against the extraordinary and looking at those examples, whether, again, it be the memo or the email or the headline, and saying, what's different about this? And how do I apply this to my work? So it really is a shift in mindset where it's no longer about passively experiencing certain elements of our work, but really being a little bit more inquisitive about what defines their success.
You know, two of my favorite examples that I've come across of this principle in action are, first of all, Ryan Holiday, who I know that you know and is just a phenomenal author. And I think I've probably said at some point, like, because he's, I think, maybe in his early 30s now. And I'm like, man, I wish when I was in my early 30s, I had like your kind of head on my shoulder, right? Because I don't think I was anywhere near as cogent and as focused. But he keeps index cards of quotes that he comes across, and that's sort of his method. And he has like these boxes of index cards that are sort of categorized by topics, which I think is fantastic. And then I heard about the phrase, I think from Austin Kleon, called a commonplace book, which is basically a collection of, you know, articles and images and words and all of that that, you know, inspire you in some capacity, but that could in some way in the future, and I think Stephen Johnson wrote about this as well, that could in the future potentially inspire new kinds of work, or it could be dots that you connect. Do you have any specific way that you recommend that people formulate this private museum?
It really is about convenience for you. So in my case, I'm a fanatic, a bookmark fanatic. So I've got a lot of bookmarks, and they're all organized in my my Chrome bookmark list. But it really has to be more than just collecting. It has to be about the analysis and the application. And so part of the collecting, I want to caution against just collecting and feeling like you're done, because that's not, you just started. That's step one. Sure. Then once you have that collection, it's about analyzing it, figuring out what's different about this example, and then templatizing it, meaning how do I turn this into a template? So in Decoding Greatness, one of the practices I talk about for reverse engineering works that you find remarkable is a practice called reverse outlining. So for example, if you find an article in, let's say, Harvard Business Review that you find really impactful, what you could do is read it and save it and move on. But I would urge you to take one additional step, and that is to reverse outline. Now, we've all heard of outlining. Outlining is the idea of bullet pointing, what you want to put into a piece that you are about to write. Reverse outlining is taking a completed piece, doesn't have to be yours, could be someone else's, and then taking a step back and figuring out what are the bullets that go into each paragraph, and what you might have coming out of that is the outline that the author would have used to construct that piece. And through that practice of zooming out and really analyzing in a very concrete way the points that went into developing that article, what you have is a formula that could potentially apply to a different topic that you can use elsewhere. Now, it's not to say that success is just a function of mimicking something that's successful, because we can talk about all of the different ways that we can evolve formulas that we've identified. But what I think is crucial here is the practice of looking at being sensitive to works that you find impactful, and then taking that additional step of thinking in formulas and developing blueprints from those works. And so that approach is an approach to skill building that you can build into every workday that doesn't involve having to take additional courses or read a ton of books, but it forces you to sort of pay closer attention to what it is that you find resonant, and then enable you to build your skill building over the course of the workday.
What is this phrase that you introduce in the book that I love, and it's so true, it resonates so deeply with me. What is the curse of creativity?
The curse of creativity refers to the fact that when we think about trying to be creative, we aim for originality. And as it turns out, people, as much as they say they want original ideas, they actually reject them all the time. And this is research out of Jennifer Mueller, who's a social psychologist in USC. And her work shows that when you show people original work, what they tend to do is reject it. And then there's additional work research out of Harvard University, where they find that there actually is an ideal level of creativity in works that are successful, and that level is a small dose of originality. And so you don't want to overshoot the mark. And when you overshoot the mark, when you produce work that is completely original, people tend to say, no, that's not for me, and reject it. And so the sweet spot really is just a small dose of creativity. And so it's a matter of finding a successful formula and adding your unique twist.
That I really, really found that compelling. I think that a lot of organizations have this misunderstanding that creativity alone is the solution. But, you know, to your point, it's about the application of those insights and those ideas more than it is about the originality itself. And, you know, as a matter of fact, I think a lot of times people get really excited about their ideas, but those ideas aren't necessarily effective or practical. And in that situation, it could just create a lot of issues, a lot of turmoil within the organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that one of the things that I hope people take away from this idea is that all of the pressure that we as creatives place on ourselves to be original is not only unhelpful, it's actually counterproductive.
Yeah.
Because if we were 100% original, then our work would not be successful. What we really should aim to do is be a little bit more sensitive to the works that we find inspiring and then analytical about what makes those works so impactful, and find ways of combining ideas rather than aiming for complete originality. And that's a much easier job than aiming for originality all the time. It's a little less exhausting, and it gives you freedom to sample widely and enjoy your guilty pleasure, because you're going to identify almost implicitly the elements that make that guilty pleasure impactful. And it's just about finding opportunities for combining that with other things you find impactful. Yeah. And that by on its own right will lead to more creative ideas.
So one of the other things that you address in this book is the concept of risk. And again, I think that there's a misunderstanding among a lot of creative people and entrepreneurs and others that it's all about taking big risk, but you argue something different in the book. How do great performers think about risk?
Well, those at the top actually rarely take huge risks. Instead, what they do is they find clever ways of trying new things without huge consequences if they fail. And you see this in comedians. Aziz Ansari, for example, doesn't tell a single joke he's unsure will work on his Netflix special. Instead, he tests those jokes in small comedy clubs, tweaking them night after night until he's guaranteed that they deliver a laugh. And if a joke falls flat, the cost is low because only a handful of people saw him fail. But it's not just comedians. Politicians do this all the time by testing phrases and slogans in small gatherings before a major speech. Authors do it by posting blogs to gauge the response. And entrepreneurs do it by pitching new ideas to a small handful of clients before releasing them to the general public. So I think the takeaway here is that so many of us have great ideas that we're hesitant to pursue because we've been led to believe that we need to get it right immediately, right out of the gate. And that's not true. And instead of being more courageous, the better approach is to learn from the best and take the risk out of risk taking.
Hey, everyone, we're going to dive back into the conversation with Ron Friedman in just a minute. Before we do, I want to let you know today's episode is also brought to you by BetterHelp. So is there something that's preventing you from achieving your goals? Is there anything that's interfering with your happiness? If so, check out betterhelp.com/accidental. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can connect with them in a safe and a private online environment. It's very convenient to do so. And you can often start communicating in under 48 hours. Now listen, this is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. You can send a message to your counselor anytime you want. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, all without having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room, which nobody likes to do. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free of charge to change counselors whenever you need it. And it's also far more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is also available. But don't just take my word for it. You can also check out the testimonials posted daily on the BetterHelp site. I want you to start living a happier life today. So as a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/accidental. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/accidental. And now back to our conversation with Ron Friedman. So something else that you address in the book is the importance of converting feedback into growth. And this is something that is a discipline for a lot of great performers. But it's difficult to do. It's not difficult to understand why it's important, but it's difficult to actually implement. And sometimes we don't want to implement it. How do great performers convert feedback into growth?
Well, the first thing is to translate negative feedback into corrective actions. So in the book, I talk about the example of, let's say you have a major speech to deliver and you call in a few colleagues and they observe you giving your speech and they give you some negative feedback. That's going to be hard. And you're going to want to be defensive about it. And that's not because you are a bad person. It's just because you're a human being and receiving negative feedback is threatening. And it's not just because of the negative feedback itself, but because of all of the implications that it has for our potential and our ability to succeed in the future. And the critical thing is to translate that negative feedback into corrective action. What I mean by that is to start thinking about things that you can change and be specific about this. What are some things that you can change about that presentation that would enable you to address the feedback? And the moment that you convert the negative feedback into corrective action, it feels like an opportunity to get better. It no longer feels as threatening. So that's the first step, is translate the negative feedback into corrective action. So you might, for example, add a few more slides, maybe cut some slides, maybe add a story, maybe add an activity. And now you're grateful for the feedback. It's no longer a threat to you. So that's one opportunity for growing from negative feedback. Another one that I would just share really quickly is gaining distance from your work. So responding to feedback quickly and responding to feedback intelligently are not the same thing. And taking a little bit of time to sulk is okay, because it's in those moments of self-reflection that we find opportunities for growth.
I think that's very insightful. And one of the things that I often talk to professionals about is, you know, listen, if somebody doesn't like your work and it just rolls off of you and you don't care, that might not be a good sign, right? Because you should care about your work, and you should care about your perspective, and you should be putting enough of yourself into your work that if somebody doesn't resonate with it, it should cause you to pause and to consider it, and maybe even to feel a little bit hurt by that. But that's okay. That doesn't mean that they're wrong, or that you're right, or that you're wrong or they're right. What it means is that you need to, like you said, step back, reflect on it, and think about what is the next meaningful action to get this to a place where it's going to resonate deeply. But that point about, you know, hey, you know, you should be, you, it's okay to sulk. I think people don't, they think, well, I'm a professional, I just need to move on. Well, yeah, you do. But also, sometimes you need to take a little bit of time to grieve something you put a lot of time into that didn't resonate. And then you pick yourself up and you move on, right?
Absolutely. I encourage you to savor that disappointment, because that becomes fuel for improvement in the future. And I love your point about noticing that how we react to negative feedback. If we don't take it seriously, then maybe that means that the goal really wasn't all that important to us.
Yeah. Well, Ron, the book is great. It's called Decoding Greatness. But it's great. It's called Decoding Greatness. So I assume you probably decoded some other great books in writing this book. If people want to know more about you, about your work, about the book, where can they go?
The best place to go to learn about the book is decodinggreatnessbook.com, where you can get a free course along with the purchase of a book. It's obviously available at all bookstores like Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You could find me at ronfriedmanphd.com or at my company, which is called Ignite 80, ignite80.com, Ignite 80 being 80. And the reason it's called Ignite 80, and you'll remember this hopefully, because it's a difficult name to kind of think about until you realize the story behind it. So over 80% of employees are not fully engaged at work. And so the mission of Ignite 80 is to reverse that trend by teaching leaders science-based principles for elevating performance.
I love that. That's fantastic. Well, Ron Friedman, it's so great to have you back on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time to share your insights with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I really enjoyed that topic. And I think the main reason is that I think one of the things Ron points out is one of the things that we should do that it seems obvious that we don't do, which is let's study the people that we respect, the people we admire, and figure out what they do in order to achieve the results that we want to achieve. I think we all could do that. So my challenge for you this week is just to identify a couple of people, not 10 people, just a couple of people who are at the top of their game, and spend a little bit of time decoding how they got there. What is it they do that makes them different from everyone around them? If there's somebody you respect in your world, find them, identify them, and speak to them and ask them, hey, how do you do what you do? Help me understand how you do what you do. Help me understand what it is that separates you from everyone else. I think if we each did that more consistently, we're going to glean insights that we can apply to our own life and to our own work as well. Hey, I really enjoyed this episode. I hope you did as well. If you did, please follow the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, or tell a friend, tell a colleague about the show. and help us get the word out, or subscribe to my weekly newsletter, which is called Three Things. I just send three things every Sunday that I think will inspire you or challenge you in some way. Also, my other show, the Herding Tigers podcast, is about creative leadership. Make sure you check that out wherever you listen to podcasts, or check us out at accidentalcreative.com. The Accidental Creative is part of the Airwave Media Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen to more fine shows like this. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.